Lessons I've Learned, a series of podcasts by global consultant, best-selling author, and former Harvard Business School professor, David Maister.
Hello, I'm David Maister. This series of 15 podcasts is called Managing Professionals, Attitudes, Skills, and Behaviors. It is designed to help people who have the responsibility for managing a group of professionals. This 12th episode is called Clarify Group Goals and is based on my book, First Among Equals, co-authored with Patrick McKenna. In previous episodes, I focus on the manager, him or herself, and the various forms of managing individuals. Now I'm going to turn to the issue of managing groups. As a group leader, your initial organizing task is to help educate and guide your people in a direction that's in the best interests of their personal careers as well as your group's future. Loosely organized individuals, accountable only for their own performance, are less likely to succeed than would a well-managed team engaging in collective activities with collective responsibilities. Before you can make your group work, you need to collectively determine and share explicit, clearly articulated answers to three questions. Number one, why does our group exist? What specific benefits can our group expect to obtain from acting as a coordinated team? Number two, how will working together as a group help us compete? What might the benefits be for each member and to the firm from investing some of each individual's discretionary time in pursuit of building a strong team? And then finally, what's in it for each of us? What might each individual member want to get out of working as a group for their respective career satisfaction? It's surprising to learn how many groups in all professions and professional departments within corporations still have not thought this through. First, why does our group exist? To obtain the benefits of coordinated groups, everyone, including the people in the group, firm management, and the group leader, needs to have a clear, unambiguous understanding of the purpose, what the group is actually seeking to accomplish. All too often, group members sit around asking, "What are we supposed to be doing at this meeting? Why are we here?" This is, of course, a disastrous waste of everybody's time. The goals and specific target benefits of each group must be discussed, resolved, and written down. Ask your group, what benefits should we expect to get from practicing with a group of like-minded individuals pursuing a common purpose that we could not get if we were each practicing on our own? Let's make our list together and see what it suggests. The most common responses that people are likely to give are really quite varied. I'm going to list 11 possible objectives now, which is a lot. Listen to the variety of things people might want their groups to accomplish. Number one, improve value to clients by delivering to them the collective wisdom and skills and accumulated knowledge of the group. Number two, make business development or marketing efforts more effective through pooling and coordination of individual efforts. Number three, obtain better utilization and development of junior professionals through collective decisions on the staffing of work, allocation of resources, and mentoring. Number four, obtain collective development of tools and templates and databases and other practice support aids that will benefit everyone. Number five, get a more rapid and effective dissemination of expertise and skills amongst the group so that what one of us knows, all of us know quickly. Number six, deliver better client service through a greater ability to put the right people on the right job. Number seven, get a better market image through the development of a collective reputation, not just the sum of individual reputations. Number eight, obtain the comfort of belonging to a small group, rather than being lost as one of a very large number of people in the entire firm. Number nine, receive informal coaching on a one-to-one basis, acting as a source of help, rather than relying on firm-wide annual bureaucratic performance appraisals. The 10th possible benefit of a group is to improve profitability by focusing as a group on ways to enhance performance. Number 11 would be to create a critical mass of time and resources so that together you could develop innovative service offerings which no one individual could afford to do alone. Now, of course, the point is that that's a long list and it's not even comprehensive. Whatever you do, don't give people this list. Encourage your people to think through and identify the specific benefits that they want from working together. As I said in a previous episode, you always face the choice of doing a lot of things a little bit well or a few things superbly, and my advice is always be selective and choose to go after a few things superbly. After adding your own possible group objectives, you might want to examine the list by asking the members of your group, which of these goals or benefits will be the easiest to obtain? Which is the hardest? Which will be the quickest to obtain, or the slowest? Which disrupts our culture least, the most? Which represents the biggest impact on our success, or the smallest? You could also get them to evaluate each possible goal by saying, which requires the most change in behavior and which the least? And then finally, which requires the most activist role for the group leader and which the least? Your answers will determine the ground rules under which you will operate and the kind of group you want to be. This is very important. Consider, for example, a group whose defining purpose is to set common service standards. Now, this may require only a modest amount of joint commitment and coordinated action among the group members. As long as everyone meets the common standards, you can leave a tremendous amount of autonomy to each person. On the other hand, if the group decides that it wants to take a collective approach to development and utilization of junior people, this will probably require that the group engage in team consultation in how all projects above a certain size are to be staffed. It would mean a great deal more intrusion into the autonomy of the individual group member, probably taking away from senior professionals their freedom to staff their own jobs. It would require much more attention and intervention by the group leader. There is therefore a qualitatively significant difference on how the group will operate depending on the nature of the goal you are really trying to accomplish. There's no point aiming for a group benefit or a goal if the group has not thought through or is not willing to do the things necessary to achieve that benefit or goal. Accordingly, as you debate the various benefits your group might reach for, you need to discuss precisely and explicitly how the group would need to operate, the minimum ground rules, in order to get that benefit. If the group will not accept the new operating procedures or disciplines, then the group must acknowledge they are unlikely to achieve that benefit and must either look for other group benefits or recognize that they don't really want to be a group. They want to be a loosely affiliated department, which may be okay. The only thing that's wrong is pretending. One thing is clear. The worst position is to be pretending, asserting that your group is pursuing a goal or a benefit where it will not accept the discipline necessary to pull it off. Hence this need for the upfront, explicit discussion of what the group is really trying to achieve and precisely what this will mean for how you plan to operate together. Now you must address the question, how will working together as a group help us compete? As the group leader, you must find ways to communicate clearly how the development of a strong team can impact your collective fortunes in terms of building competitive superiority in the two most critical areas, the competition for clients and the competition for talent. The stronger and more focused the group, the more likely it is going to be active in the marketplace, and the more widespread will be its ultimate reputation and profile. Obviously, the group with 20 people practicing in a specific area is likely to be better equipped to handle a client's problems than the firm with just a few people. Its very size indicates a degree of success. The client who retains the services of one or two people who are part of a larger group expects to get the benefits of the shared expertise of the group. After all, no one person is likely to possess all of the necessary experience to handle many of today's more complex matters. Think about the implication of your group's functioning in the war for talent, for hiring and recruiting. We once asked the firm leader, "Do you get the sense that you're losing your best talent from those groups you would consider your best organized or from those groups that are slightly dysfunctional?" This person paused for all of 2 seconds, looked at us and said, "You know, I think you're onto something there." We've since posed that same question a lot around the world and without exception have elicited a very similar response. Their reactions suggest that having dysfunctional groups is costing firms large amounts of money in turnover. What develops, if you do this right, is a virtuous circle. A firm develops a strong group, and as a result, that group gains a market profile. That profile attracts the better work, and the better client work then attracts the more talented players in the marketplace. It's absolutely necessary that as you form your group, you address upfront the third question, what's in it for each of us? You must help each individual determine his or her career objectives. You should have a general discussion with the members of your group about personal objectives. Start by going around the table and asking each person, please tell us, what specifically do you want to get out of being a member of this group? Be honest, please. Tell us all. What can our groups collectively do that will help you be even more successful? Here are some topics for you to discuss openly. Are we really prepared to create a supportive environment? What would that look like? Are we really prepared to work at getting the benefit of joint intellectual exchange? What would that involve? Are we really prepared to cooperate in developing common tools and methodologies that we might all share? How would that come about? Are we really prepared to invest in developing superior support staff, internal systems, and technologies to provide for the effective conduct of our common business? Are we prepared to effectively engage in joint marketing activities? Are we prepared to devote our own investment time to helping each other when faced with sensitive client issues? It's also important to learn what your people want and need from one another, what they prefer, how they differ, and how to value and use those differences. Spend some time addressing as a group some of the more common unspoken personal questions that exist within the minds of all members. Frequently asked is, why was I asked to participate in this group? Who are the other members and what are their strengths? How am I going to find out what they're good at and also let them know what my capabilities and interests are? What are they likely to expect of me? A group becomes a team only when people help each other out, when assistance, cooperation, support, and mutual encouragement are readily forthcoming. They are not inevitable. You've got to work to get that buy-in right up front. This has been the 12th episode in my 15-part series, Managing Professionals, Attitudes, Skills, and Behaviors. In future episodes, we will look at the topics of developing the rules of group membership, compensation systems, and further resources for you. If you'd like more information or access to other podcasts in this series or the previous series, Marketing Professional Services, go to my website, davidmaister.com. This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set from my website, davidmaister.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.